if your goal is to compete at a national or a international level, you need a support team. Like, you can't just rely on your coach, because your coach needs to be focused on weightlifting, right? And the coach can seek outside education, but if the coach doesn't have the qualifications and the educational background to do nutrition, to do the sports psych, to do, you know, the massage therapy, right? Like body work, right?
Yeah.
The physical therapy, right? These are things where you need a support team.
Hi, Tom. It's my pleasure to have you on Evidence Strong Show. If you could briefly introduce yourself.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This is super exciting. So I'm Tom Smalley. I'm a certified mental performance consultant, the founder and owner of my own private practice, Struggle and Strain Performance. And it's all about helping high performers with their mental fitness and getting them to be the best they can be when their best is required. So it's been kind of my MO and my career is to help people bridge the gap between physical and mental fitness and understand that there's a whole different side to things that you need to address.
You have some experience in Olympic weightlifting too, don't you?
Yeah. So I am a competitive weightlifter myself. Being in weightlifting, seeing how welcome even the community is, seeing how small the community is, right? Like, a lot of people know each other. It's been a joy to start working with some weightlifters. You know, starting out, that wasn't my main population. And then pretty soon when people figured out that I was a competitive weightlifter, I think there's something to be said about someone that's been in the same arena as them. And so when I'm working with weightlifters, you know, I have about 30 weightlifters I see consistently as individual clients. It's really, really interesting to work with people that I can very much connect with on a personal level too, because I know what they're going through. And so I think I address things a little bit differently and I'm a little bit more creative because I know the sport so well.
Excellent. So excited to have you and to pick your brain on some tips how to support weightlifters best for coaches and for weightlifters too. So let's imagine we are bringing the weightlifter to the gym and we are a coach. How to create the environment that will be amazing in terms of not only training the physical part of the sport, but also the mental?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think a lot of people do it differently. I think I want to start with a lot of coaches in weightlifting and in, you know, in other sports, athletes are often given labels, right? So you have athletes that will be given labels like they're not clutch, or they have a low motor, right? Their effort isn't great. And it's our job as coaches, it's the coach's job to produce a culture and an environment that allows them to, one, understand how to face adversity head on, understand how to cope with adversity and manage it, manage pressure. And then also the environment needs to be made a environment that is self-motivating, right? So a lot of times I'll have coaches that I consult with and they'll ask me, this person's effort isn't, they're just not giving everything they have. And it's like, okay, well, what are we doing as coaches to produce an environment that makes that athlete want to give everything they have, right? And so I think that is like the struggle that coaches have is producing that environment that makes athletes autonomous, right? And give everything they have. And I think that starts with creating a culture of emphasizing the process over outcome. Like, that is like number one. If a new lifter is coming to the gym and they're new to weightlifting and you're already emphasizing, we want to hit these numbers and we want to do this and medal and podium at nationals, you're going to lose them real fast, because one, you're already going to place them in a place where they're going to experience some burnout, because now they're feeling pressure immediately to be at a certain level. So we want to try to almost, I like to say, there's a difference between standards and expectations, right? Expectations are placed on us by other people. Maybe they're placed on us by ourselves, by past performances, but those expectations are outcome related, right? And we can't necessarily control the outcome, but we can control, as coaches, as athletes, as people, we can control our standards. And so the biggest, I would say, objective for a coach is to have standards in your gym. Have standards of your values, right? Is it consistency? Is it discipline? Is it empathy? Whatever those values are, define those. Have clear standards of what your gym's values are. And then when the athlete walks in, now make sure those values are known, because that athlete is going to understand, like, this is what's important first, is being this type of athlete, right? Trying to show up as this type of athlete, not worried about outcome aside, how do you want to show up on competition day, in training day to day? And that having values and standards that of we're going to give all of our effort, we're going to even as something as simple as we're going to reflect thoughtfully after training sessions, right? So like these are standards we can control, right? And when you can control those standards, now you're thinking very process oriented.
Any practical tips? So should you have a board with your values written on the wall? Should you, what are the options coaches have?
Yeah, I think the options are, I think having signs and like signage on the wall, is it people don't realize how far that goes of like, even a website that lists your core values, right? It brings legit feeling to, okay, this is what matters in this space, right? And then as a coach, they need to embody that as well, right? So you can't have core values and not follow them yourself. So when you make those core values, make sure there's something that you're going to adhere to also, because I've been in rooms where the coach, the leadership expects people to follow something, but the leader isn't doing it themselves. And it's very, very challenging as an athlete to try to follow something that even that it looks like the leader doesn't even believe in, right? So as a coach, I think the practical tip is finding values and standards, putting weights back, putting things back where you found them, cleaning the barbells off, little details like that, cultivating that environment, having those standards that aren't necessarily outcome-based and forcing the athlete to think about numbers creates an environment that is going to allow the athlete to grow, because you're not just coaching them in weightlifting. You're coaching them for life too, right? Like you're coaching them for real life outside of weightlifting things. And so I think if you can apply those standards in the weight room, they're going to translate outside too. So I think, whiteboard. If I was a coach starting a club, I would say, make sure everybody has a training journal, because how you reflect on things after training is going to carry into the next session. And, I think having a training journal, allowing them to write things down, shows them the process a little bit more than, just posting it on Instagram.
So how would you advise while here how the training log, the training journal should look like?
Typical training journal for me personally, as a weightlifter, I like to do like put my training in what my coach is giving me, and then I have a spot for reflection. So as a mental performance consultant, I do with my clients what I call a WWWWI list. So it's just a T chart right down the middle, and then it's just what went well, what's worth improving. So the idea is to try to get rid of language around good and bad, right? The minute we start labeling things as good and bad, we start falling into narratives, and our thoughts are now labeled as I shouldn't have this thought, or I should have this thought, or this thought is bad to have during training and competition, and this thought is good to have during training and competition. And so when we start thinking about that, we start getting into a fight or flight if we start having certain thoughts. And so we want to try to get away from the language of good and bad, negative and positive, right? Where a lot of people are. And really just take 3 or 5 things that we felt we did well that we can control, right? So it's not like, oh, I snatched 100 today. That was great, right? Like, that's awesome, right? That's a great day. But like, no, we want to say like, I was intentional with how I kept the bar close to my body today during my first pull, right? So like something really down to the details. And then, or like I loved how I was intentional about the affirmations that I was telling myself before taking a tough lift, right? So something that we did that we could control and carry into the next session. And then the other side is what's worth improving, right? And so it's not the negatives, right? It's looking at these things that we did that maybe we didn't do at the highest level that we want to take for next time to improve up, right? So it's not saying like this was bad and I don't know how I'm going to fix it. It's looking at these things we didn't do great and looking at it as an opportunity to improve on them for next time, right? So we take something self-defeating maybe and turn it into something self-enhancing. So it's looking at that what's worth improving with that growth mindset of, hey, like these are just a few things that I want to be intentional about next time.
There are athletes who are very easy to talk to. Maybe they have similar personality to the coach, so they, the bonding is very easy and instant. But there are other athletes who are, maybe they are different, maybe they are just different from the coach, maybe they are a little bit more reserved. How to build an effective communication? Because the more coach understands the athlete, the the better the coaching would be, presumably. So how to implement effective communication?
Totally. And I think this is a PSA to athletes too. It isn't all on the coach, right? So when you choose to be an athlete at a competitive level, you're choosing the responsibility to also communicate. Whether it doesn't mean you have to be this outgoing, you know, extroverted human being, but at your bare minimum responsibility as an elite level athlete or as a competitive athlete is to communicate with your coach, because your coach is not a mind reader. So any athletes listening to this, you have to, it is your responsibility as well, as much as it is the coach's. That being said, I think it's really a good practice to get into to for the coach to just ask straight up, hey, like, what are your preferred communication styles? Like, do you want me to check in daily? Do you want me to check in weekly? Can I match the your expectation for me? So athletes have, coaches have expectations for their athletes, and athletes should have expectations for their coaches. And it's important for both sides to understand what those expectations are. Similar to the athlete joining a gym. These are our standards, and these are the standards that we and values that we go by at this gym, and like we want you to embody that. And so the coach and the athlete need to make sure they can meet the expectations. Is that an expectation that I can meet? That can I check in with that this person every day? Right? I wouldn't tell my client, you know, that I'm gonna check in daily if I actually knew I wouldn't be able to do that. So really setting those clear boundaries of understanding what that athlete needs in terms of communication. But then the other aspect, right, is the athlete needs to understand that coaches are mind readers, and you can't get what you need from a coach if you're not going to ask for it, right? The worst thing is they could say is no. So I think there's obviously two sides to it. In terms of understanding what an athlete needs, I really think that's a discussion that you have to have with the athlete. I don't think it's something you don't want to leave it up to chance, right? So like, you don't want to get this athlete to come into your gym and then, you know, try to check in frequently and then just back off because you realize they're not responding, right? So the more legwork you do up front with getting to know the athlete and building that relationship, the easier the communication is going to be down the line.
How would you go about it? Would you suggest having an interview when the athlete comes into the gym, or what are the best ways to do it, you think?
Yeah, I think it's a conversation. I think, you know, if athletes are unable to advocate for themselves, or if it's a younger athlete, scales are great, right? Inventories are great. You know, it's an easy way for an athlete to fill something out and you to get an idea of, you know, okay, maybe they don't want me to talk to them as much, or what kind of motivation do they like, right? Do they like someone that's rah-rah and pumped up, or do they like someone that's calm, right? So people respond differently to different styles of coaching. So I think trying to put together an inventory of like what, finding out what that athlete needs is another way, or like a survey, right? To understand what that athlete needs is another way to get information without having to have a direct conversation. But in my opinion, like, if you can't have that conversation with an athlete, then they're not at the emotional maturity level to handle being a competitive athlete yet.
Interesting. Two questions on that. Some young athletes, you know, they come from different backgrounds. They may actually be lacking in communication skills when they come to the gym, and yet they may be a talented athlete. And you as a coach may decide, okay, I will try to work with them nonetheless. Now, how would you bridge this gap, or how would you teach the athlete to communicate? Would you have any advice or tips?
The first thing I would do is make sure that the athlete knows that they're talented, right? And that they have a good shot at being good at this. But like with like every elite athlete, there's going to be work involved with it. So understand, getting them to understand what it takes, right? And what it takes to be great. And then with that, you start building buy-in. So trust isn't built overnight. And I think that is something that people struggle with because they want that instant trust, right? But trust is like you putting dollars into an ATM in small moments where you showed up for that person, right? It's not, you know, there might be some moments bigger than others, but as an athlete, you don't just immediately gain trust. A coach can't just immediately gain trust from an athlete, right? So some quicker than others, but you want to make sure you're daily depositing that trust, right? And so a lot of that goes with just continually showing up for the athlete, showing in different ways that you care, and then trying to adapt to how the athlete communicates, right? So I think in terms of maybe they have poor communication skills, I think coaches need to look at it as an opportunity to help build those communication skills, maybe they came from a background where they didn't have parents around or they didn't have a good home life. Okay, great. This is a good opportunity to build up communication skills and help them for life, right? So looking at things similar to how athletes need to look at a growth things with a growth mindset and as an opportunity, coaches should do the same. And so I think, you know, the things I've helped coaches implement is like weekly check-ins, readiness scales, right? So things of that nature where you're getting information and it's more in a scheduled way. So you're not, I think the more you can schedule it, the more official it becomes and more serious it becomes in their mind so that they won't, they'll know that, hey, Wednesdays we communicate, right? So if they're not someone where you can have that fluid communication and check in wherever, start scheduling it and make it a priority. Show them that they're a priority to you as an athlete and that you're a priority to them as a coach, right? And this is a real business relationship and something that matters to you. And you want to see them grow. So I think scheduling it helps.
Awesome. I like that. Very, very practical. How to transition from being young lifter who just comes to learn weightlifting and then has talent or doesn't, but works hard and gets somewhere. How to get them from being totally dependent on the coach to being in a partnership with coach at some point?
Yeah, I think it requires a few different facets, right? So it requires the open communication of a coach and athlete and what they both need from each other, right? So understanding that what the athlete needs and what the coach needs is number one, right? So if they're gonna be a lot more dependent on a coach if their coach is providing them with a lot more than they need, right? So like they're gonna, like you're almost building patterns early on. So when you get an athlete at a young age, like don't do everything for them because then that's what's gonna be expected, right? So putting them in a safe place of controlled adversity, right? Or of controlled accountability, right? Builds those habits so that they're not as dependent later on, right? So when I worked at the college level for athletics, I saw a lot of handholding. And these were 20 to 23-year-old men, right? And, you know, my thought was like, these coaches are holding their hands and then they're going to graduate and then they're going to have no life skills. Right. And so the more you can, you're actually doing them a disservice by doing everything for them. Right. So I think having a checklist for athletes, having that accountability, right, where there's an expectation, the athlete has a focused accountability of, I need to do my requirement on my end is to do this, this, and this. Right. And then often like kind of readapting and reevaluating what those accountability checklist items are, right? It could be anything from hydration to, you know, I need to not look at my phone while I'm training, right? So little things like that. But I think understanding that both the coach and athlete need to put in the same effort. And once there's a lack of effort from one side, that's when things get very difficult.
Weightlifting is about the numbers, but it also is a weight class sport. So there's a nutrition and sports performance goes hand in hand with nutrition. There is the psychological, the mental part to it. You have to learn skills to cope with stress. They are only 6 lifts, 3 and 3, and you have to make them. And they are on the stage. You are by yourself and the weight is heavy. So what is your view on an athlete having a coach versus athlete having a coach, but also nutritionist, psychologist, whatever network or a team they may need or have around them?
Yeah, definitely. I think, so I'm huge on scope of practice, right? And I think it's super important to have a support team, right? So understand, like, listen, I get some people can't afford it, right? I get, you know, some people, you know, that's not possible. But if your goal is to compete at a national or a international level, you need a support team. Like, you can't just rely on your coach because your coach needs to be focused on weightlifting, right? And the coach can seek outside education, but if the coach doesn't have the qualifications and the educational background to do nutrition, to do the sports psych, to do, you know, the massage therapy, right? Like body work, right?
Yeah.
The physical therapy, right? These are things where you need a support team. And the best athletes I've been around have a support team, but not only do they have a support team, but though that support team knows each other, right? And knows what's going on with their nutrition, knows what's going on with their PT, and it's all connected, right? And so the best athletes I see take care of their body at a high level, take care of their mind at a high level, right? It doesn't mean they don't have setbacks, so they don't face adversity, but they have a support team around them, right? And those are the ones that last a long time in the sport and see a lot of success. So I think it is really important. The coach is super important, no doubt about it, right? You need a weightlifting coach if you're going to be an elite level weightlifter. That being said, I think you start seeing a lot of strain on the relationship when the coach tries to do more than just be their weightlifting coach, right? And so I think if a coach can just be the weightlifting coach and allow someone else to do nutrition and allow someone else, if weightlifting coach is checking in about nutrition, there's just going to be a blurred line of like how many jobs they hold for the athlete. So I think getting qualified professionals around you is vital to success.
All right. How coaches could think about teaching athletes the skills for transition? So the weightlifting could be teaching life. Now, how the coach could be thinking about implementing more than just weightlifting skills in their athletes.
Yeah, totally. I mean, thinking, like you said, like the relationship can be so beneficial. This is a really, really unique sport where that relationship, the coach-athlete relationship, is like no other. It's just you're placing a lot of trust in the coach, and the coach is placing a lot of trust in the athlete, and you're with each other a lot, right? And you're with each other during tough times, during great, the best of times, right? The PRs, right? You're with each other in really, really important times in life. And so with that, I think comes for the opportunity for both of you to look at adversity from a different lens, right? And so I think when those looking at like a bomb out as an opportunity for the athlete, showing, you know, what they need to do to face that adversity, right? Like helping them understand what adversity looks like. Like, I think as a coach, they just need to understand that like when you decide to be any sort of coach, you're also taking up a human being as well, right? And that human being is going to have tough times. That human being needs to be thought of as a human being first, right? And so the minute coach forgets that the athlete is a human being is the minute you start losing the application of these skills that you're building translating into real life, right? And so like every opportunity, every setback, every adversity instance is a chance for this coach to help them build these skills. And so as a coach, you need to remember that you're taking on the human being, because then you're going to keep those skills at the forefront of your mind of trying to help them for that transition to life too. I've rarely seen in my time an athlete that works hard in the weight room not being a great person and very resilient human being on outside of the weight room, right? The two are very correlated. It's very, very rare to see someone give everything they have in the weight room and not be that type of person outside of it, right? So it translates. And so as a coach, I think understanding your why and that aspect and like taking it that seriously, that you're creating a really great opportunity to help develop a human being.
You mentioned a few times adversity and dealing with our adversity and how that builds a great weightlifter. So could we go there? Let's imagine that the athlete had horrible competition, or they plateaued and they are not improving anymore for various reasons. Maybe there's an injury. Maybe there's no apparent reason. How would you go about that?
I mean, the first thing is we reflect, right? We do that. Even in the worst competitions we ever had, what went well? Three things that went well that you controlled, right? So you're immediately taking a competition and thinking about what possibly went well. And then you're like, oh, well, I did maintain composure between this rep, you know, like, so I think like immediately trying to reflect, but not in a way that's going to cause you to have more overthinking, more stress, right? So controlled reflection and controlled and intentional reflection post-meeting, right? And then the other aspect is the cool thing about the brain is that neuroplasticity, we can actually practice how to formulate a better response to stress. And so if we take these instances of adversity and reflect thoughtfully, understand reframing thoughts, start using mental imagery, right? And start applying mental skills and then get back on the platform. We're reinforcing the habit of overcoming adversity and actually building our mental resilience and like that neuroplasticity, that stress response. It's super cool. So if you fail at something, it's actually an opportunity to rebuild your stress response. And coaches have a really, really big impact on that, right? And how they go about looking at failure, right? You know, it's corny, but you know, I always heard that fail means first attempt in learning, right? And it's the acronym. But it's true. If you look at failure as just another attempt at learning and being better for the next time, then all of a sudden you're reframing the thought. The problem people run into is they have a negative thought or so, and they just try to think positively, right? And if I told you to This is a very common problem with self-talk, right? If I told someone to not think of a pink elephant, they're going to immediately think of a pink elephant, right? And so just telling someone to think positively isn't going to actually do anything for them. So we want to take the self-defeating thought and turn it into something self-enhancing. So instead of, oh gosh, I, you know, missed all three snatches, or I missed my first snatch, I'm going to miss this next one. And if I miss this next one, my coach is going to hate me. Okay. One, diffuse the thought. What evidence do you have to support that thought? And what evidence do you have against that thought, right? If you have any, you're not going to have any evidence to really support that thought, right? And so diffusing the thought and then actually reframing it to be like an opportunity. Okay, I missed my first snatch. This is a really awesome opportunity to show how resilient I am in the second attempt. This is a really great opportunity to show all the preparation, hard work I've been putting in, right? So not guaranteeing an outcome with that self-enhancing thought, but almost looking at things from a lens of, oh, I can't wait to show people how, show myself and show other people how much work and preparation I've put in, right? So relying on that preparation, because that's where confidence comes from, aside from achievement.
So what I'm hearing is that you advise to going back to the process and making sure that the process is as good as it could be. Then you can always go back to that. No, the work actually is done. I may miss this lift, but I've put the work in, and that's the opportunity to show it. If it happens, it does. If it doesn't, it doesn't cancel the work that has been done.
No, and people, especially in this sport, right, come, like you said earlier, they come with a lot of all or nothing thinking, right? Because it is six lifts, right? And how many times do people compete a year? Maybe four or five, right? Like, yeah, maybe 18 attempts at something, right? Where you're practicing hours and hours and hours at something, right? So it is, people come with that all or nothing thinking of, oh, all this work that I put in is for nothing if I don't make this lift and I don't medal, right? But if you think about it, like, and you ask them, okay, so all that growth as a human being and all that growth as an athlete wasn't worth it, right? And then they're like, then they'll say, oh, well, no, I'm glad I did all that, right? So it's very easy to fall into that all or nothing pattern of thinking, right? If I don't make this lift, it was all for nothing. But the reality is, like, you grew as a human being, you grew as an athlete. Maybe you didn't reach your outcome goal, but that doesn't mean it was for nothing. And then I think, like you said, the preparation aspect, right? Like, confidence, you know, there's no denying, right? Confidence comes from achievement. If you do something successfully over and over again, you're going to have more self-efficacy. You're going to have more confidence, right? There's no denying that. But confidence also comes from preparation, right? And if you put in the work and prepare, you're going to feel more confident. And that's part of that is having that support team around you, right? Where you're putting work in all the different buckets. And if you prepare in all those different buckets, you're going to feel pretty good on competition day. And then, like you said, right? Like, if it doesn't happen, at least you don't have that regret of, I left something out there, right? Or I left, you know, I had more in the tank, right? I could have done this, right? Discipline weighs ounces, but regret weighs tons, man. Regret weighs a lot more than discipline, right? So if you're disciplined and put in the preparation and it just doesn't come together on meet day, okay, we're going to reflect and we're going to build off that. But you also, you can, no doubt about it, be disappointed, right? There's no, every feeling is valid. You could feel disappointed. You could feel bummed, but you'll feel still like you gave everything you had. That, you know, in your gut, I gave everything I had. It just didn't come together and I didn't perform the way I wanted to. But you'll also know in your gut if you didn't do everything you could have done. And I think that's really what it comes down to.
All right. So in the case where the person has some regrets, I don't know, they didn't go to bed on time, they didn't eat enough, they did some crazy stuff 2 days before because they were in a new city, excited, blah, blah, blah. How to make a positive impact out of that?
A learning experience, right? I think self-compassion and giving yourself some grace for your journey and your environment. And maybe things weren't exactly how they needed to be for yourself, but we also have a lot of control over things. So I think also having honest conversations too, right? Are important for growth. And in that case, you know, hey, these were our goals. Your actions didn't align with them, right? So we can't be upset if we didn't reach these goals or were or if we weren't in position, in the best position possible to reach these goals, right? Because we can't guarantee an outcome, even if we goal plan. And even if we do everything, we can't guarantee an outcome. But if we did something in the two nights before, or we weren't taking care of XYZ, we can't really be mad about not hitting our lifts and getting a gold medal, right? Because that means our actions didn't align with our goals. And that's a really, really tough pill to swallow, right? Because it forces the athlete to accept, like, I didn't do my job, right? And that's when the coach needs to step in and say, okay, you didn't do your job this time. What can we do differently next time, right? How can I best support you to do the things you need to get done next time? Right. So there's accountability on both ends. Even if the coach doesn't believe in that, they need to act like they do, because the athlete's already self-defeated, right? They're already down on themselves and already bummed and disappointed themselves that they didn't take care of what they needed to take care of. They know what they did. So if they already know what they did, then hey, compassion, but also keep them accountable and say, hey, let's look at the next opportunity. Here's what XYZ, what that you didn't do last time. What can we do to do things differently this time? But there is an aspect of like, hey, you need to be accountable too, right? Like that's, you know, and listen, if you don't want to medal or you don't want to compete at this high level, that's fine. But don't say you do and not have your actions align with it, right? So getting your values and goals to align with your actions and your actions to align with your values and goals is super important.
Negative talk. So some athletes find it motivational to be speaking phrases in their head about how useless they will be if they don't hit that lift, and it works. Would you try to change it? Would you leave it as it is?
Gosh, you know, I think, you know, I think self-talk that is guaranteeing an outcome is not great. So I think when people are using self-talk that's like, I'm going to make this lift. If there's no thought behind it or no feeling, emotional attachment behind it, that thought is just words, right? So if they don't actually believe it, then it's not, the affirmation's not helping them. So in that sense, I don't love that kind of positive self-talk. I like affirmations that are like, I am capable, I am prepared, I am ready, right? Breathe in confidence, exhale doubt, right? So things of that nature, things that we could control. In terms of someone yelling at themselves or telling themselves, you know, you're nothing, like you're, you know, I've seen people do that, right? They psych themselves up enough to almost like prove themselves wrong, right? It's and for some people, right, it brings enough physiological arousal and frustration and anger that they're able to go out there and make a lift. Now, in my professional opinion, I don't think it's intelligent to rely on that, right? Because what happens when you miss a lift after telling yourself you're going to be useless if you miss this lift? Now your whole demeanor has just changed, because okay, well now I'm useless, right? And now your psychological and physiological arousal is depleted because you just proved yourself right. Like, you know, so if you don't make the lift after doing something like that, then now you're going down a really, really tough path. So I really don't think that kind of self-talk is helpful. But again, you know, I can't go into somebody in a session with somebody and tell them they're wrong, right? I mean, I think long-term, how we talk to ourselves is going to be largely dependent of how we see our self-worth. And so I think building up an athlete's self-worth is going to slowly get them to not talk to themselves like that naturally. But it is interesting though, Alex, because I have seen that, right? Like, and I have people that will tell me like, oh, well, I just call myself an idiot and like that I can't, then I'm nothing, and I get jacked up and I go make the lift. But like, this is such a technical sport and such, it's not just a raw strength sport. And at some point you're going to hit a weight and you're going to hit an adversity in competition where you can't rely on anger just to lift something.
Right. So your approach is to broaden the toolkit of them, of an athlete. So this is not the only thing they have. It worked in the past, but you think it may be better to have other things to complement.
Yeah. I think relying on that consistently is a dangerous game, right? It's the same thing as people relying on being a adrenaline lifter, right? Adrenaline's going to come and go and is going to be there for a lot of competition. But like, if you're relying on that, who knows what the environment's going to be like? Who knows how long you're going to be sitting for your attempts? It's just a dangerous game to rely on adrenaline to stay focused or to stay intentional. So that's when that self-talk comes in.
Right. And it's a whole thing with dealing with all the adrenaline after the competition, that lump and the downhill and recovery from that. So
yeah, absolutely.
Okay, one more question is, how as a coach they can support in general, mental health of a lifter, are there any things that should be taken care of? What would be your advice?
Yeah. Well, I do want to emphasize one thing is that language matters. And this is something I didn't mention earlier. And it goes along with the environment piece. And language really matters. So, like, not labeling athletes as weak or soft or, like, not believing their injuries. Like, those things really create an environment that is toxic. And then also causes the athlete to think that it's almost like gaslighting them into thinking they're the problem, right? So language, what language you use and how you speak to somebody is going to really either improve the relationship and improve the environment or really be a detriment to the environment. So not using mental disorders as adjectives, like saying they're OCD, they're so OCD, or that you're being bipolar, like not saying phrases like that, right? Not using language like soft or you're being too emotional, right? Like things like that are just super invalidating and only create toxicity in the culture of an environment. So similar to that, I think coaches can, one, watch the language they use. How you speak to your athletes is going to, every sentence you'd say to an athlete is going to have an impact, regardless if you want it to or not, right? Because these are a lot of times younger minds and things that are minds that are still developing. Right. So you're going to have an impact regardless if you want to or not. And so using specific language and the correct language matters. And then also not going out of scope of practice, like understanding, listen, coaches get super, super close with their athletes. I get it. But there's boundaries still. Right. And so understanding those boundaries and doing training on looking for signs of mental health concerns. Right. Having that open dialogue and building enough trust for them to come to you, and then listening more than you speak, right? Like, I think people fail to do that. And they also a lot of people are always listening, just waiting to respond, and aren't actually hearing and ingesting what the athlete is saying, or just in general in society today. We're always waiting to respond. What about just listening and not going into problem solving immediately? Just listening to hear them and what they're going through and validating what they're going through. So I think that's going to build that trust for them to open up about mental health stuff, about life's challenges, be honest with you, and be more communicative, right? Like, and be more accountable with their communication.
On that note, this sport, any professional sport, favors persistent and resilient and people who push through adversity, but it can go too far. How would you navigate that?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I wrote an article not too long ago about the pursuit of excellence and the pursuit of perfectionism, right? And so these are two different things when you think about it. So perfectionism is going to, one, definitely push more burnout. Like that's a given. It's going to push more burnout. It's going to cause us to be trying to always kind of being consumed by it. And so when you pursue excellence, you look at mistakes as learning opportunities. When you pursue excellence, you're looking at progress, not perfection, right? And so with athletes, I think it's important to think about, one, what are good reps? And what are you just pushing yourself to absolute exhaustion and not actually helping reps, right? Like if you're falling into that perfectionism trap, a lot of times athletes, people will deem it as like, oh, well, he or she is just putting extra work in, right? And in society today, wearing extra hours as a badge of honor is like a real thing in a work world, right? Like, oh, I work so hard. I work so hard, right? But like, okay, that's great. You work so hard, but like, why not just work smarter and take better care of yourself and then be ready better, right? And that's the pursuit of excellence. Understanding that line between these are quality reps and quality things I'm pursuing, and then this is, or this is just tired reps and me just, you know, banging my head against the wall kind of thing. The same thing as someone, you know, attempting 10 max attempts on a PR, right? Like, one, you're only getting 3 attempts for that lift, so you might as well stop after 3, right? And like, yeah, you might get lucky one time out of 10, but is that really reinforcing anything? No. So I think understanding the difference between that the excellence and the pursuit of excellence and the pursuit of perfection, right? You're going to be pursuing more setbacks as learning opportunities. You're going to pursue progress and have these process-oriented goals over time, right? So I think falling in love with the process is going to push you more towards that pursuit of mastery and pursuit of excellence, not perfectionism.
If you would have to give 1 to 3 pieces of advice for coaches, Olympic weightlifting coaches on psychological skills they could be implementing?
The first one I would say that's most important to me is mindfulness. And people get mindfulness wrong a lot. So mindfulness is the ability to accept your thoughts as thoughts and not reality, and allow them to be there, give them space, but not give them the energy, right? And so, like, I always say, like, I give the example of like tug of war. Like, the more you tug on a self-defeating thought, the more it's going to tug back and pull you away from your values. So as coaches, help your athletes identify their values as an athlete, who they want to show up as on competition day in training, regardless of the outcome. And those are their values. Those are their athlete values, right? And the thoughts that are self-enhancing, they'll pull them towards their values. But if they're self-defeating and that athlete is pulling on that rope, we need to let go of that rope, because that rope is pulling us away from our values. So it's accepting the thoughts as thoughts, right? And understanding that it's not reality, but being mindful of them, because that's how we are able to redirect our focus. When, what's important now, right? You'll hear me say that to my athletes all the time. Hey, when, what's important now, right? What's important in this moment? And that's when, in competition, that stuff starts to have an effect. Then the second one would be self-talk. How we talk to ourselves is so important. And I think, you know, again, a lot has been said about self-talk to just be negative to positive, but we want to reframe thoughts to be self-defeating to self-enhancing, right? So it's not this negative to positive action, because we want the self-enhancing thought to be something that the athlete actually believes in, right? And then the third one is mental imagery. So people get mental imagery and visualization, the difference, very incorrect. So mental imagery is using all of your senses. And that's one that I really think coaches should reach out to somebody like me and say, like, hey, how do I start introducing mental imagery, right? Like, you know, how do I start implementing this? Because that is a real skill. But visualization is just looking at, you know, through your eyes, doing a skill. But like really using all your senses, that's mental imagery.
We have to have another interview.
Yeah.
So two short questions to finish. The first one is, what is your favorite lift?
My favorite lift is the jerk. I don't know why, but it was the one that kind of came naturally to me when I came into weightlifting.
It wasn't brilliant.
I know. That's what I've been told. Yeah, it just came very naturally to me. I think I have a pretty good amount of overhead strength, and my legs are, you know, I think it was just the cues that I was given early on. It was just like, you know, short step back, reach with the front and drive under. Like, it just, you could come out of a messy clean and everybody's like, oh gosh. And then you hit the jerk and it's just the most euphoric feeling in the world. And so I think there's something about that just is like, you know, you're almost, you know, people are almost counting you out, like, oh gosh, that was a tough clean. And then you hit that jerk and everybody's like, whoa, like, and it's just, you know, that recovery is really cool.
Awesome. And the last question is, where people can find you if they want to work with you or see what you're up to?
The website is struggleintostrength.com. And then my Instagram handle is S2SFOF. And so you can find me on Instagram and my website. And I'm also on LinkedIn as well. I know we connected on there. So I try to post content in all different areas and trying to get more about weightlifting specific stuff. You know, I'm thinking about doing some ebook resources on mental imagery for weightlifters and that type of thing. So definitely going to be more resources coming out.
Awesome. Thank you, Dom. It was truly a pleasure.
Thank you.